order the sword to that anger, unburdened by the leaden weight of the earth. It will be a great help towards this if we keep constantly in our thoughts the vanity of all things and the rapidity which with they pass away, so that we may withdraw our affections from things that are so trivial and fix them upon that which will never come to an end. This may seem a poor kind of help, but it will have the effect of greatly fortifying the soul. With regard to small things, we must be very careful, as soon as we begin to grow fond of them, to withdraw our thoughts from them and turn them to God. His Majesty will help us to do this. He has granted us the greatest favor of providing that. In this house, most of it is already done. But it remains for us to become detached from our own selves, and it is a hard thing to withdraw from ourselves and oppose ourselves, because we are very close to ourselves and love ourselves very dearly. It is here that true humility can enter, for this virtue and that of detachment from self, I think, always go together. They are two sisters who are inseparable. That is humility and detachment. These are not the kinsfolk whom I counsel you to avoid. No, you must embrace them and love them and never be seen without them. Oh, how sovereign are these virtues, mistresses of all created things, empresses of the world, our deliverers from the snares and the entanglements laid by the devil, so dearly loved by our dear teacher, Christ, who was never for a moment without them. He that possesses them can go safely out and fight all the united forces of hell and the whole world and its temptations. Let him fear none, for his is the kingdom of heaven. There is none whom he need fear, for he cares nothing if he loses everything, nor does he count this as a loss. His sole fear is that he may displease his God, and he begs him to nourish these virtues within him, lest he lose them through any fault of his own. These virtues, it is true, have the property of hiding themselves from one who possesses them, in such a way that he never sees them, nor can he believe that he has any of them, even if he be told so. But he esteems them so much that he is forever trying to obtain them, and thus he perfects them in himself more and more. And those who possess them soon make the fact clear, even against their will, to any with whom they have intercourse. But how inappropriate it is for a person like myself to begin to praise humility and detachment, when these virtues are so highly praised by the King of Glory, a praise exemplified in all of the trials he suffered. It is to possess these virtues, then, my daughters, that you must labor if you would leave the lands of Egypt, for when you have obtained them, you will also obtain manna. All things will taste well to you, and however much the world may dislike their Savior, to you they will be sweet.
So David is talking about, and what St. Teresa is talking about, is detachment and humility. And as we've talked about, the only path to true detachment and humility is to put your mind on God and to follow God's will. It is virtually impossible to think your way to detachment and humility. When the mind is a very clever thing. It's a very clever instrument. And so, of course, is the ego. And if you think about something that you don't want to be attached to, in the thinking of it, you are becoming attached to it. I don't want to eat any peanut butter. I don't want to. It's fattening. I can't have it. I don't want it. And you're just reinforcing that attachment with every thought. And it's the same with humility. With humility, you think, how can I be humble? How can I be the humblest person in the room? And then your mind goes to work thinking about how could you manifest that? How could you display that? And I'll be at the back of the line. I'll let everybody else go first. I'll cast my eyes down at the ground when I'm talking to somebody. All these outward manifestations that your mind comes up with, and they might not, probably not being humble at all. You're too busy thinking about how you're supposed to be humble or what humble is supposed to look like. And I can't help but think, you know, one of the wonderful things about the spiritual masters is they get to a point in spiritual consciousness where they transcend the law. And I think of Mother and this time that she has talked about where she is with this saint. And she said, you know, over in India, and she said, you know, God had quite an ego that day in me. And she was talking about, you know, very effervescent about what she was and what she'd accomplished and all of these things. And of course, Mother was constantly enmeshed in God. She was following God's will every moment of the day. She was in constant contact and communion. And she said, you know, on that day, God was displaying, you know, quite a bit of pride. And, you know, this master, this Indian saint, actually, he took her aside afterwards and he said, you know, Mother, you know, it is so important that we be humble. And, you know, she just laughed and she told him that, you know, she actually didn't know anything about that. All she knew about was following God's will. And that's what she does. And it's such a wonderful example to us of that contrast between saint consciousness and full self-realization. And in saint consciousness, you're always trying to be good. You're always trying to do good. And of course, that's why we all love the saints. Who wouldn't love that? But in full God consciousness, you are playing whatever role God tells you to play. Sometimes that's the tough guy. Sometimes that can appear to be the villain. Sometimes you're doing things where people are clicking their tongue and going, oh my goodness, I thought this was a highly spiritual person. I can't believe they're doing this or they're acting this way. And God will have you do what God has you do. God has his own ideas that are perfect in that moment and they're perfect for his plan. And after many, many years of ascension and many years of trusting God, this is what a highly realized master does. This is God consciousness, following God's will at all times. So in following God's will, that's true humility. And in following God's will, we can't help but arrive at a high level of detachment. And the reason is in our human sense, in our ego sense, we often want to do something that is counter to what God would have us do. So we're constantly, you know, particularly in the beginning, well, and ultimately always faced with a choice. Do we do what we want to do, our little self, or do we do what God wants us to do? And that is that choice, and true humility is following God's will. Because we know it's for the best, it's for the highest, even if it doesn't look like it to everybody else in the room. To perhaps everybody else in the world. This is where these great giants in God shine forth through history. Christ, as the story goes, was crucified for it. He was pilloried and he was spat upon and he was belittled. And this is what God had in store for him. And Christ knew it going in. But for one such as Christ, the only path for him to follow was to follow God's will, even knowing what was in store for him. So, you know, that's a bitter pill, or it can certainly appear that way in a worldly sense. So how is it that we can be happy all the time in God when he's having us do things that we might not want to do initially? You know, oftentimes God has us do the hardest thing. And often in just about every case, you know, that is the highest thing we can do. In every case, it is the highest thing that we can do. But that might not be what we want to do. That might embarrass us. That might make us look bad. We might be humiliated, but that's okay when we have complete and total trust in God. And when that's our pole star, when that is our guiding light, we know that we'll be okay. So let's go to this idea of how to be happy all the time. And I want to refer back to a talk that Yogananda did on June 12th of 1949 down in San Diego, California. You know, that's getting to be a little while ago. For those of you who were born around that time, you know, that's 77 years ago. It's getting to be quite a while. So I'm not going to read this whole talk because there's quite a bit to it and it's quite wonderful. But I'm going to start off with a plan that will never fail. That sounds pretty good. So Master says, I have a plan that will never fail, a plan that is the only way out if you want happiness. What do you want happiness for? First, remember, happiness gives money. Happiness gives health. Happiness is good. First, keep the state of your mind happy no matter what happens. You shall see that by living, so living, you can be happy. You can be in a palace and be in a most miserable man. There are many millionaires who are my students. With the exception of a few who have renounced everything and followed this path, I think nothing of them. They are the most miserable people I have seen on earth. Why are you dreaming that money is happiness? I have made money useless. And whether you believe it or not, I have gone without a bank book. Never it was missed. When I was out, somebody gave it to me. It was I who was ministering to all, so God ministers to my needs. The same when I was in Boston, when I had food on the windowsill, a bottle of milk, and a little electric stove, and there was a little closet where there was a wash place, and there I bathed. But still, when I wanted to do so, I had always a banquet, because I live by the law, not by money. God was with me. I want you to follow this law. This law will never fail you. Throughout the war, we lived most successfully and prosperously and happily, because money was not our goal. What is the solution? I have the solution, and it's working. I am very encouraged to see the health and happiness of men, women, and children who live in our two colonies, Mount Washington and Encinitas. How could a Hindu mistrust? When I came here, Father used to send me $200 a month, and I stopped it, mind you. I said I wasn't going to live by the money. It seemed very hard, but I never missed a meal. In fact, I had so many people ask me to eat that I was thinking of reducing. And I had a little house. I was just a servant, but I knew that God would entrust me with a big work. But that didn't mean anything to me except the people who have been happy through me and through the grace of God. When I see the faces of people, somebody came in the Hollywood church from San Jose and he said, first time I see vegetarians that are alive. Another person from South America and he said, I see the disciples of the order. They live like millionaires without worries. That was the greatest compliment given, and without ill health, without disease. Your motto must be changed. Happiness is the first thing you want. Next is food. You can't go without food. I want you to see the purpose of life. Next, health, freedom from disease, and then freedom from the slavery of desires. For what they have in the shops and the machines they want you to buy, they rope you in and keep you a slave. The purpose of life is plain living and high thinking. I am not preaching primitivism. I am preaching freedom. Because you have come to a place where civilization, between the communists and the industrialists, with all good intentions, places you in a position where you do not know where freedom lies and where your next meal is coming from. How could a Hindu from afar, stopping the money that his father sent, his earthly father, how does he maintain 100 people now? You know the time you have maintaining your little family? God gave this monk a big family, and God is maintaining them, and I have no bank account of my own. That is true. Some intuitively force money in my pocket, otherwise I don't receive. I don't ask from anybody. I have many wealthy disciples, but I told them all, I don't live by your money. They all just jumped out of their skins. That is true. That is why I am showing you this new way to freedom. And look at those who live at Encinitas and Mount Washington, how happy they are. All our people that live, my secretaries work day and night. They used to get $7 to $8 a month, and now they get $10 to $15 a month. But they live better than those who have $200 jobs. You ask anybody, have you got money? Oh no, I'm in debt. Then what is the use of $200 a month and all the time being in debt and buying more? You think happiness is the will-o'-the-wisp running away from you. Be happy now. That's the secret. By laughing off lots of desires, you can be happy. And I find this talk so inspiring, and I know myself, I've pursued money not so much to have, you know, this big luxurious lifestyle, but to understand it. I came in this world very curious about how it all worked and how it flows and how people make it and how people lose it. And this has all been very fascinating. But Master says, make money your slave. He says, put your mind on God and be happy now. Throw all your cares, throw all your burdens onto God. Let God carry them. Mother tells us the same thing. And Master says, and this is a motto for many in our group and certainly on the farm at the Kamano Ashram is high thinking and plain living. This is a captivating idea. And I think the more we think about this and the more we dwell on it, the more appealing that it becomes. And the very inspiration for the farm ashram came from this talk. And let me see if we can actually find where Master talks about it. So he says, there is a solution in your life, colonies beyond the city limits. I tell you, we have a place in the desert for boys. I have two or three places. Everywhere I go, I seem to attract colonies. 15 acres of land with beautiful trees, a windmill, and plenty of water to have a swimming pool. There's no utility bill, and we get butane gas and a stucco home. Very beautiful. All around are hills, and the climate's so marvelous. The boys go and have such a wonderful time. And what do you think is the tax of it? $5.50. And I'm going to keep it that way. They wanted to give me electricity and I refused it. And it just reminds me of the chapel that they're building on the farm. No electricity. They thought I was very foolish because I could not afford electricity, but I said no. Put that colony in Los Angeles, 15 acres. They charge you right away about $150 in taxes. In Mount Washington, we used to pay $50 taxes. All right, when 50 people used to live there and they used to pay $1 a month for rent, now it's $150. Still, they pay $3 a month, and you have your sweet little apartments, very nice, overlooking the tracks, and day and night, trolley cars come crashing through your bones. The commissioner of police in Chicago said that if the noise was taken away from the city, people would live at least 10 years longer. Don't live in cities. Don't seek jobs for money. Jobs mean work, happiness, and food, and freedom from sickness, and freedom from slavery, from all these government plans that are tying your feet and keeping you enslaved. Motto of civilization should not be money, but plain living and high thinking. You're not going back to primitivism. You're going to freedom. Get 25 acres of land beyond the city with a few select ones. Go there and dig. Produce your food. It costs hardly any money to start these colonies. And we have so much offering of land now. We don't know what to do with it. We don't know what to do with it. But we are going to start quite a few colonies, and I want the younger generation there first. And then I'll take those that want to organize. So this was the inspiration for the farm. And I'm thinking a lot about that because I'm driving up to Camano Island. I'm starting my trip tomorrow, and then I'll be there on Friday. And I'm very interested in this particular trip to get in the right mindset and to really understand what the goal is, what the idea is, what it means to be there. And, you know, in the times I've been on the farm in the past, I'm sort of over, you know, for a place that they don't say poverty, they say simplicity. And perhaps simplicity is a better word. But for a place that values simplicity, I'm often overwhelmed by the wealth. I see these huge stacks of firewood, you know, all kept dry under cover. And I think, you know, that's warmth in the winter. That's wealth. And I see all of this food and I see this lushness and these vegetables growing and how beautiful they are. And I see the amount of food that they produce. And you know, it's not just for them. I'm not talking about some ideal state that just they can attain. This is for all of us. It warms my heart so much when I see somebody tending their little vegetable garden, even if it's in a little apartment in the city. And I used to be inspired in Seattle when I'd see the Asian people, and no matter what kind of a tiny little place they were living, they would have a little vegetable garden outside and they would go and they would tend it and they would get their fresh carrots and perhaps fresh cabbage and onions and the different things. And they'd dig it right out of the ground and wash it off in the sink. And there it is, full of prana, full of health, full of all the good things that we need. And there's all these benefits from living a high-minded, simple life. You know, one of the things that's wonderful about getting towards the age where you can retire is you don't have the bounds of work and production so much anymore. And you can start thinking about, you know, how do I really want my life to look? Now, we can pretty much do this at any age. We can certainly do it. But in retirement, you can really do that. And I think I just love this idea of high thinking and simple living. And it falls right in with that idea of detachment and humility. To just constantly put our minds on God, and no matter what you're doing, no matter what task, whether you're working in the garden, whether you're sitting in the sunshine, whether you're just sitting in quiet contemplation, maybe it's a rainy day and you've built a little fire and you're all cozy inside, and you can just put your mind on God and you can contemplate on God. And it is so surprising to me still every time to feel the upliftment, to feel the peace. And to have that feeling that, God, I never want this to go away. I want to be with you forever. It is really the life. It is the ultimate luxury. I remember I had an experience once at the ashram. I think it was the first time I went back in 2004. And the way that you took a shower or a bath is to, you'd go outside and you'd fill up a big bucket with hot water. And then you'd go back in and there was a concrete area inside the little bungalow that I was staying in or the little apartments I was staying in. And it just had a drain in the middle of the floor and it had a place for water to come out, cooler water. And you'd use the cool water in combination with the hot water that you got in the bucket on this concrete floor to take your bath. And at that time, I was doing speaking engagements at these luxury hotels down in Mexico. And these are these all-inclusive hotels with, they really lay out the buffet and all the food and they give you these quote unquote luxury accommodations and you're looking out at the water and the palm trees and everything is just as fancy as they can make it. And when I was at the ashram taking this bath with out of this bucket of water on this concrete floor, I was just overcome with bliss. And I thought to myself, this is true luxury. This is true luxury. It's finer than any hotel that I've ever stayed at in my whole life because of the pervasive nature of spirit in this place and how uplifted you are and how you're sort of chanting Ram Nam all the time. You can hear Ram Nam coming through your open windows. Everyone there is trying to be on their best behavior and their highest consciousness, and you're surrounded by that and you're immersed in that, and you can't help but be uplifted. It's just such a wonderful place, and it's what I think that an ashram should be, is a physical location where you can go, you can become uplifted in God, you can recharge your batteries, your spiritual batteries, you can feel good about the path and you can feel good about the direction that you're going. And then you take that with you out into the world. And we have a little bit of that with the Farm Ashram. They're so good at having lunches or get-togethers, or they reach out to the community. I know now they've got a farmer's market at the South Camano Grange where they go once a month. And they try it. They do this outreach where they bring joy to the community. And sometimes they have events there at the farm where people can come and they can feel that joy, that happiness, that loving nature, the way people treat each other. And they take that back to their own families, their own homes, back to their job, back to where they live. And they feel that upliftment and they spread that out themselves. And this is, in my mind, the point of and the idea of an ashram. A place people can come for that spiritual upliftment. And, you know, you might not be designed to be there for a long period of time. Maybe it's a place to come and get that spiritual nourishment and then go back out into the world and do what you need to do out in the world. There were times where people would stay at the ashram over at Anandashram in Kerala, and Mother Krishnabai would come to him and say, okay, you know, you've been here long enough. It's time to go. And the problem was, is people would go there, and if they stayed long enough, that would become routine. That would become the world, and they would start falling back into their old habits. So she realized that the benefit of the ashram is to come and to drink those spiritual waters and to be revived and invigorated and lifted up and blessed in God and to be able to take that out into the world. So we have so much that's available to us. We have so much. We have so much now online. We have David's talks, Mother's talks. We have so many that are trying to encourage us to go in the right direction. We have so many tools that are available to us if we would just avail ourselves of them. And it's so interesting. David G used to say, everybody's living an experiment, their own experiment in life as to what causes happiness, what creates happiness. And it's so obvious when you pay attention and you do this. And the more I pay attention to God, the more I put my mind on God, the more exposure I have to the masters and Mother and David and others in Master, the more uplifted and happy I become. And when I stray from that, I notice a difference. And sometimes it's subtle and you drift down a little bit. And you maybe don't pay that much attention, but you drift down just a little bit more and perhaps a little bit more. And before you know it, you're actually starting to experience some problems, some dissension, some discontent, some dissatisfaction. And you're going, what's wrong? What's going on in my life? This is not my normal happy self. What should I do? What can I do about this? And you realize, I've started to forget God a little bit. I'm not putting my mind on God like I normally do. And then you hustle back. You go back and you meditate with renewed vigor. You listen to the talks. I have this thing that I do when I'm at the gym because I'm physically active at the gym. I'm lifting weights and the circulation is going. My pulse is raised up and I'm very alert. And I found this to be a very good time to talk to David's or listen to David's talks. There's no, you know, falling asleep. There's no, losing energy and losing concentration. You're very alive in the body and your mind is alive. And this is, I found a good time. So do these experiments yourself. Perhaps a good time to listen to David's talks or Mother's talks is when you're out for a walk for the same reason. Driving in your car, it can be a tremendously uplifting experience. You can practically elevate your car right off the road if you get into it enough. It's quite wonderful. And I know some people chant when they drive, and they chant quietly in the background when they're doing just about anything. You know, David was such a good example. And one time we were camping up at Colonial Creek, and it's a wonderful campground. For those of you that are familiar with it, it's on Highway 20. It kind of connects, goes over the Cascades and connects Western Washington to Eastern Washington, goes over and ends up in Winthrop. But right kind of up at the peak there at the pass is Colonial Creek Campground, and we were camping up there. And David was in his RV, and he was busy himself in the kitchen. And there was a mosquito. And he put his finger on the mosquito and squashed it. And when he did that, you know, that's not that unusual. That's what people do when they're out camping and mosquitoes are bothering you. But what was significant and what I noticed is that when he did it, he said, Om Sri Ram. You know, he had the highest thought of that bit of life that was in the mosquito, raising it to a higher consciousness so it could evolve on and continue its journey. So when the lawyers are trying to figure out, oftentimes something's happened, and the lawyers are trying to figure out if a crime has been committed. And the way they do that is they try and discern to the best of their ability intent. What was the person's intent? So a lot of people squash mosquitoes. But when you see a God-realized master with this highest intent when he does this act, and he's trying to move the mosquito higher, and he's trying to move that little bit of life, that little bit of soul in the mosquito to a higher consciousness, you know, that makes an impression on me. That shows his intent. And we want to have that same high intent for our lives, for what we do. You know, the burdens of this world can be quite heavy. And there's hardly one of us that doesn't carry around some guilt, some misgivings, some wishes on how we could have done things better, concerns about what we've done in the past, and concerns about what might be waiting for us in the future. And the only proven escape from all of those worries, all of those concerns, is to put our mind on God, put our minds on God with all of our intention, with all of our will, and to constantly do it from moment to moment to moment. And in addition to that, be constantly asking, what's your will for me, God? What do you have for me? What would you have me do? And when you get an inkling, you follow up on it. You don't discard it. You look at that little inkling and you say, okay, God, this sounds like a good idea. Is this really what I should do? And you don't pay attention. Pay attention to what comes back to you. What is that comes? And this truly, as these readings have told us tonight, as Master's speech has told us, this is the path to happiness. This is the path to being happy all the time. Doesn't that sound appealing? You know, I often think that happiness might not be as elusive as people think. You know, if we were just to dispel our worries and our concerns, people love their worries. They must worry. They must love them because they hang on to them so tightly. And if you take away all their worries, they'll come up and manufacture something new to be worried about. So we get very attached to our concerns. What? You think I'm worried? Well, what if I just completely didn't care? You know, this whole world here would fall apart. All these things that I'm doing to hold things together, you know, it would all just come and fall to pieces. Of course I'm concerned. Of course I'm interested in making sure everything goes smoothly. Well, the interesting thing about that is, as you put your mind on God, and a strange, incredible, incredulous thing happens. Things work even better than they were when you were worried about it. Things come together in miraculous ways. Things go smoothly. And the most incredible thing about it is that you sail through almost effortlessly. It's almost like gliding over the surface. Here you are, and you're in communion with God. You're in touch with God, and you're still making your famous potato salad, or you're still sweeping the floor, or driving across town, you're still able to get the groceries. But the whole time you're in the grocery store, you're saying, God, isn't this tremendous? Isn't this something to see this bounty? What should we get today, God? What should we fill our basket with? Let's go from aisle to aisle and let's go shopping together. You know, sometimes I'm at the grocery store and I'm there and I've gotten a few items that I came to get. And I said, now listen, God, while I'm here, can you please tell me anything that I'm forgetting? What am I forgetting that I need to bring home?
And, you know, just as often as not, some little thing pops into my head. And I go, okay, thank you. You're exactly right. I've been wanting to get that for weeks. It didn't quite make it on my list, but we really need it. Let me go get that right now. And I go, thank you, God. That's fantastic. You know, this is the best companion that you could possibly have. I mean, this is like having that really smart person with you all the time that also simultaneously loves you and is 10 feet tall. They can provide all the protection, all the security, all the embrace, the calm, the wonder, everything that it is you're looking for, whether you're in the grocery store, walking down the road, laying in bed, thinking about whatever situation it is that you're going through. Trust in God. Turn everything over to God and see how your life works. I think you're going to be very impressed and very delighted. And you know what? I understand that I'm preaching to the choir here. You're probably already doing this and you're probably way ahead of me, but I just want you to be encouraged to continue to do all the good things that you're doing and start to just, you know, lose the energy towards the bad things. You don't have to beat yourself up. You don't have to punch yourself in the face. You don't have to flagellate yourself. You don't have to kick yourself down a flight of stairs for any bad habits that you have. All you have to do is just start not giving them energy. You're just not going to pay attention. You're not going to tune into that channel. The channel that you're going to tune into is God. And it's going to be absolutely miraculous what happens in your life. And this isn't in the future tense. It's happening in your life right at this very instant. As you're listening to my voice, you are lifted up. You're with God. You're living the charmed life where detachment and humility come as the most natural outcomes to a mind focused on the divine. Bless you. You have my love. You have my care, my understanding. What's more important is you have God's love. And God's care and God's understanding. And it is with you if you're willing to open yourself to it and perceive it every moment, every second of every day. And with that wonderful thought in mind, please pray with me. Oh, Heavenly Father. Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty of thy glorious presence in every part of my being.
I feel the wonder and the beauty of
thy glorious presence in every part of my being.
My heart is bursting with my love for thee.
My heart is bursting with my love for thee.
I feel the power of thy perfection surging in every cell of my body.
I feel the power of thy perfection surging in every cell of my body.
My mind and my intelligence are radiant with thy healing light.
My mind and my intelligence are radiant with thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss of my communion with thee.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss of my communion with thee.
I and my Father are one.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Peace.
Bliss.
Amen.
Amen.
You know, as you say the prayer, it's wonderful to realize that every single one of these lines from Mother's prayers are an affirmation. When you say, I and God are one, that is a powerful affirmation.
So we never want to do these prayers by rote, and we never want to just repeat the lines. Put every bit of power and concentration that you have into every one of these lines, because if you sit there and you read them and you analyze them and you break them down, every single one of them is a powerful, powerful affirmation that can help speed us towards the divine. May God be with you. May peace be with you. May God's love surround you until we meet again.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you.
Thank you, Peter.